Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. With that, let's jump into the episode. All right, everyone, welcome to Delphi's Clubhouse Room, where we talked about investing in NFTs, and we're also going to be talking about why Cooper is so tall. So hope everyone's excited. Hey, Alex, saw you joined in. Just FYI, this room is being recorded. I got everyone's consent beforehand, and it'll go on our podcast channel, on the Delphi podcast. So excited for everyone to be here. It's a busy room. We're going to keep it to an hour. So everyone's got 10 to 15 seconds to do their intros. We'll go just top of the line down. So G-Money, Billy, Cooper, and we'll go from there. G-Money, kick us off.
Hey, how are you? I'm G-Money. I'm an investor slash collector in NFTs, originally from a TradFi background and, you know, just going head first into the NFT rabbit hole.
What's up, everyone? I'm Billy. Been in the space since around 2012. Been involved in Ethereum since 2014. Helped start the blockchain consulting practice at Ernst & Young, and then was at Consensus for years, and then recently started a company called Layer Zero. And thanks for having me on stage.
What's up, guys? I'm Cooper, currently building the creator economy as crypto strategy at Audius, doing a lot of work around social tokens and collecting a lot of NFTs. So excited to be here.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Jake Brickman, CEO and founder of Coin Fund, which is a crypto fund and also an early investor in the NFT space. I'm also a curator at First Edition.xyz and digital NFT creator.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Also, I'm Sam, biz dev at Async Art, and also a creator of music NFTs with a professional choir ensemble called Verdery Ensemble.
Awesome.
Hi, all. I'm Dragos. I'm a product builder. Been in this space for 5 years. My background is software development. Farmbridge co-founder, partner Dbop, digital mobile software consulting and developing company. And I guess I like NFTs.
Brian, used to work at Dapper Labs doing a bunch of stuff. Now working on Rabbit Hole to help people learn about crypto and earn tokens. So,
hey guys, James Todaro, a managing partner for a crypto investment fund. Been in the space for a while. DeFi caught my attention back in 2017, 2018. And then lately, these past couple months, NFTs, particularly at their intersection of DeFi and NFTs. Thanks for having me.
I'm the instigator at C Club. We're the social token incubator, and I'm a contributor to the Mint Fund, where we help artists mint their first NFTs. Glad to be here.
Hey, everyone. I'm Alex. I'm the co-founder at Showtime, which is an NFT network that aggregates from all the NFT platforms on Ethereum. And super stoked to be here. And I think I'm taller than Cooper.
Oh, wow. All right, good. So that part of the conversation is over. And guys, we'll keep this conversational. So, you know, don't worry about me. Feel free to ask each other questions, dive in. But somebody, please just give us a 30-second overview on what an NFT is, because I'm sure there's people new to this that haven't been sloshing around Clubhouse. Jake, I feel like you got a good overview, but we'll go with you first.
Okay. I was like, don't jump all at once, guys. So an NFT is a blockchain record that represents, you know, some digital content, perhaps some physical object in the future. NFTs, to me, I always say, like, it's not what an NFT is. It's like how we design NFTs. I think we should design NFTs as, and I've put this forward in an article in our blog, as a liquid intellectual property right, or just property rights toward initially digital content and then eventually, you know, more broad asset classes of physical goods.
It's pretty cool, guys. So why are NFTs so popular right now? I feel like it's a lot of just massive speculation on Twitter. Every time I open it, I feel like I see a new $10 million sale or $30 million sale. What kicked off just this NFT craze? And, you know, why is it so popular like this week, last week?
I kind of feel like it's a cultural movement. You know, I think that for a long time in crypto, it's been very tribal and community-based. And I think with NFTs, we're seeing the formation of these micro-economies, you know, CryptoPunks being a good example where people can really rally behind creators and different communities and whatnot and sort of form their own niches and have like high-status goods that represent them. So I think especially in the last couple of weeks, you know, just the proliferation of like very intricate, you know, NFT communities has kind of led to people trying to figure out how to become a part of those and kind of have a narrative around it.
And to add to what Cooper said is, you know, I think the introduction of collectibles like NBA Top Shot has really helped a lot because I think collectibles is something that everyone innately understands, right? Like we all collected something, whatever it was when we were kids. So to finally see that in a digital form with digital scarcity, I think has really kind of helped people understand the value of a digital good.
Also have the audiences and now they're able to generate revenue. And so this has driven up a bunch of this attention. People who are popular are making money and talking about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like in another room, someone asked, why is this time different than 2017? Because a lot of the same like artists and what have you were interested back then. And it was Justin Blau actually who said this, which is COVID has really hurt creatives and artists. And that has really been a catalyst for why this time there's much, much more interest from like tier one artists to really do this. And I think like last weekend, I guess it was this weekend, Justin Sale was first, I think it will be like a shattering moment in the industry where a lot of artists just realize, oh my, like, holy shit, like this is real, right? A Patreon model and of sorts that can be done on chain.
I'll take the opposite side here, actually, than everyone else here. So I think it's just because so much money was made during the bull run that people have money to spend on digital goods. Just having increased consumer spending, so we can just splurge on these, on CryptoPunks and things of that nature.
But how do you explain Top Shots though? How do you explain Top Shots? Because I think most of the new users for Flow are not like Ethereum native. I mean, maybe some, but I think there's a whole new, I want to say like, if you look at the Venn diagram of new crypto wealth and non-crypto wealth or just users, I would almost like reckon that like there's some overlap, but I think a lot of the capital that is coming in for Top Shots is not particularly your traditional.
Yeah, the number I'm interested in is the number of collectors. If the number of unique collectors is increasing over time, then we know this is a trend that's being sustained. If it's just volume going up, it's more of the same capital kind of being recycled here. So. You make a really good point, but it's kind of hard to tell to see if these are actually new collectors versus just volumes, because that's kind of the main metrics that we're seeing right now.
I think you guys are all right. I would add, you know, just thinking from the artist perspective, I've always thought for the last couple of years that creatives and especially artists were some of the best candidates for non-technical and non-financial use early adopters of blockchain. I kind of said this in other clubhouses, but you know, it's a group of people who are really interested in technology. There's a new media art movement, you know, started at the turn of the century and continues today, marrying art and tech. They're willing to do weird things with apps, with electronics, with buying ether. They're willing to experiment. And as such, they become like a great like user group. And what we're seeing also is a kind of a critical mass of NFT technology. You know, for a long time, NFTs were accessible only to folks who could deploy smart contracts, but now you can go on Rarible and, you know, mint one for, you know, hopefully a few bucks. And so I think that also has played a role. It's like we've been on a 20-year timeline of artists and technology sort of mixing together, and now finally it's found a monetization model. And certainly there's an element of speculation here, which we could talk about, but that's part of it too.
Guys, why is there a dichotomy in the space between NFTs that are artwork or fun or collectibles and those that are generating yield? Doesn't every NFT have the ability to generate a yield? I mean, even something as simple as a painting or an image could be seamlessly brought to a museum in virtual reality or something like that. And this might be a lob of a question, but I guess what do NFTs unlock from a yield generating perspective that isn't available in the real world or is new in crypto?
I think what we're kind of seeing is this paradigm shift in investing where you're no longer really investing in an asset. Because previously, like what happened to me is I didn't invest in a bunch of these governance tokens because
they didn't really have a use case. But what happened was, like, now you're investing in people and you're investing in communities because you can retroactively add kind of like yield or any other use case to any token. And so I think what we're seeing is people just investing in people and communities that they believe in, maybe in hopes that later down the line, there will be some other like use cases generated for the assets that they hold.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, that's a really good point. Like, I've been thinking a lot about what, I mean, a lot of the focus on NFTs right now is art, but I think art is just like a vehicle to a proof of concept to bring this idea. I think I'm excited about the usability of NFTs via like NFTX or N20 or some of these other platforms that, you know, are allowing you to get liquidity on non-fungible assets. And I think you start with art, you extend it to real estate and a number of other things, which I think for me was an aha moment because in 2017 in CryptoKitties, I sort of brushed it off. And then I think to your point, like we're seeing some like charged particles, which is, you know, no pun intended, like energizing these NFTs by wrapping them on an ERC-20 construct, like depositing in there like 8 tokens. But yeah, like this idea of like, or what you earned it with Y Insure, just tokenizing insurance contracts were liquid in Nexus and just create a secondary market off of that. So I'm excited about that because I think with the usability, I mean, certainly there's always going to be, I think, a subset of like NFT investors that are like, you know, like the same people that show up in Christie's auctions and buy a $6.6 million people. Like, that's fine. Like, they just want to collect it. But I think there's a whole subset I hear. What I'm excited about is really at this intersection of DeFi and NFTs, where like you bring usability to NFTs, you bring, you know, and that component I think is something that we just haven't seen in the traditional world. And I'm super excited because I think that really unlocks so many different primitives and use cases that my imagination doesn't stretch that far. But, you know, it'd be awesome to have like a self-destruct NFT if you sell a token through like a weekend, right? If the market tanks and like you sell your whatever token, it has an NFT attached to it and it self-destructs. Well, like it creates like a really interesting gamification and like it brings emotional value to otherwise like things that just necessarily don't necessarily have like emotional value, but NFTs really do, right? Art does, or some other, or music does, right? So I'm excited about that. So I'm constantly kind of looking for those kind of use cases.
And to build on what Santiago just said is like, you know, the way I fell into NFTs, you know, I was involved in a shard and then I was planning on selling it once I unsharded it. And what I ended up doing was I ended up depositing it on NiftyFi to see if I could use it as loan to get a collateral, right? And within 2 or 3 days, I was able to get a loan. And, you know, when it happened, like that was like an aha moment that I think the first time I experienced that in DeFi was with Aave. And I was like sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, like what is this going to do for capital efficiency, right? Because like right now I could have a $10 million piece of art hanging on my wall at home. And yeah, it's probably pretty easy to get a loan for that because there'll be people that will insure it and all that. And like the cost of doing that is high. So you need to have a high value product in order to do it. But I think like as things get digitized, you're kind of like going down the curve and you're making this, you're increasing capital efficiency like all the way down. And like, to me, like that's kind of like, you know, that changes everything.
Are you guys concerned that a lot of the volume though that we're seeing is stuff that might be a little bubble-ish? Like Cooper, you just put out a post where basically I think you said that there's, you know, over 100 million in moments being sold on NBA Top Shots. There's over 100 million in crypto art sold on cryptoart.io/data. When do you guys feel that we're not in a bubble, out of a bubble? And frankly, I love bubbles because it just spreads adoption in a viral way where it would never happen without it. So I'm not one to shoot it down at all.
Yes. I mean, I think that we're like definitely in a bubble without a doubt. I was listening to Josh Richards and Dave Portnoy's podcast last night, and they went on a 5-minute riff about Top Shots and whether or not they were buying them. So like that in and of itself is like proven enough that we're going through some sort of bubble here. But I think the good thing about it is that beyond this short term run up that's happening with everyone looking to get their hands on NFTs, you know, creatives are exploring how to use this in a very serious way. And so in the same way that we saw a lot of really amazing governance tokens come out of the 2017 ICO boom, I think we're going to see the same thing with NFTs where, you know, we'll look back in 5 years and there'll be some pretty incredible projects built on these primitives.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think that we are in a bubble, probably maybe early middle stage. But what was really interesting to me is whenever something comes back in a second cycle, bigger than it was before, that really kind of convinces me that there's real merit there. As we saw with, you know, with Bitcoin from, you know, in 2013 and 2017 and then DeFi. We saw that big explosion in 2017, and then it kind of collapsed, but then came back bigger than ever before. And we're kind of seeing a similar thing with NFTs, where back in 2017, I dismissed CryptoKitties as well. I was like, I don't know what the real value is. But then as I started to see this bubble come back, it makes me think there's real value here. And I agree with, I think, a lot of the people here that it's kind of captures maybe the general public's interest initially with collectibles, digital art. But like Santiago was saying, I think that there's going to be a lot of intersection between DeFi and NFTs that are the, kind of these two powerful kind of market structures that are forming right now. And it'll be very interesting to see how those are integrated over the next few years.
Yeah, it feels a little bubblish. Someone said it. I mean, I think there is certainly like it coincides with the bull market in general crypto. But yeah, I think like, well, we haven't, I mean, look, Top Shot, for instance, is just the NBA, right? I mean, they have partnerships with a number of other like sports leagues. I think all of the sports leagues in the US. You have now other similar companies, you know, I think trying to tokenize and somehow like create NFTs for like, you know, sports leagues like the English Premier League. And, you know, a lot of this is kind of reminiscent of 2017 because people try to do it. But yeah, I don't know if it's like this intersection. People are really bored at home with COVID, and this just becomes like traditional. Like, let's talk a little bit about collectibles, like baseball cards and Pokemon cards are just going. There's just sort of seen a renaissance, right? And Legos too. Like, I mean, some of these some of these markets have just taken off because, you know, I think people, it's just, you know, a weird state of the world we're living in where people are a little bit more bored staying at home.
Do you guys feel that? Like, what are people actually getting when they buy NFTs today? Like, what do you get from purchasing a Top Shot moment? What do you get from purchasing a CryptoPunk? And I guess my second question for the group is there an expectation that you'll be able to use these things in the future within potentially games or sharing or to generate yield? Or is it basically just all TBD? Yeah, happy to be a good question to ask around.
Well, I mean, I'll not to monopolize the conversation, but I'll just be quick. I think for me, you know, it's sort of like intuitively, as we spend more time in the digital world, you want to dress up your identity in an interesting way, right? I mean, we have this idea of Bevelam goods, which is this sort of inverse correlation between utility and value, right? You have like things like Hermes Birkenbag that just have no utility. I mean, a bag's a bag, right? But these things cost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, and they're really scarce. Now you have approval, like this intersection of humans always want to find a way to differentiate. You can always bet on that. Throughout history, you always want ways. Scarcity is very coveted. And now you have a provable way of demonstrating that a punk is a punk. And like, you also have, what's interesting here is you have a full chain of the life of said NFT, meaning the genesis and how it traded hands. And like, you have hash masks. Now you can infer the names of that. I mean, it's pretty interesting. Like, when you start seeing art, and you start saying, okay, well, this hash mask has gone through and it was initially named X and like it had all these different owners and the name has changed so much. And it actually, like, the data in and of itself is quite interesting and valuable, I think. And the second component, I think, is, yeah, around the usability, I'm not sure. I think some gamers inherently come, like a lot of people in crypto come from World of Warcraft and like disillusioned, dissatisfactions, bad experiences from not being able to use their skins or just being, I don't know, had a bad experience. But I think for now, it's really just, you know, people want to have a way to differentiate. And we're spending more time in the digital world. And so naturally, CryptoPunks or what have you become coveted kind of possessions, if you will.
And to build on that, you know, I was actually out in Miami last weekend and I was shopping. And I'm around all these like high-end stores. And I wanted to do some retail therapy. I wanted to do something. And as I was walking around, I was like, you know, like, this is kind of stupid. Like, you know, I have nowhere to, you know, buy my cool t-shirt or wear my cool sneakers, you know? So I think you've seen like a lot of a movement towards that, you know, probably on a massive scale, you know, like what the way I feel, maybe a lot of other people feel. And, you know, when I take a look at why I purchased my, my punk is because I noticed pretty quickly once I was in the NFT world, that some of the most OG guys, the guys that knew the most, the guys that were like the most knowledgeable, the most helpful and all these things, they had punks, right? And that's like, cause when I first got into NFTs, I was like, no, I miss punks. I want to find the next punks. And like, it wasn't till like, I realized that I was like, oh my God, like, you know, like kids today view, you know, like they spend money on Fortnite skin. They spend money on stuff in Roblox and those things don't give you necessarily any extra utility. they're literally just a visually appealing thing. And I think that like the super cycle in the long term, which probably explains why we're in a bubblicious state right now, is because the narrative is so good, right? The super cycle is for the next, you know, 50 years, you're going to have more of a digitalization of our lives. So like you want to get in front of that cycle as early as you can.
Are you guys, I guess one thing I have a question on is a lot of the collectibles in the real world are based on brands that have been built up over the last 50, 100 or more years. Baseball cards, Pokemon cards, take your pick. It seems like for these things to exist in crypto is tough because you run into IP issues. Like, how do you guys envision the brands of crypto becoming tokenized? Like, do we have to create, like, we have to create our own brands from the get-go and then tokenize their likeness? Like, Axie Infinity is creating an awesome community. These axes are worthwhile, so people kind of want to buy them. They could also game with them, but it's kind of hard to port old brands to crypto because of the IP issues, but it also takes a long time to build brands around the content and media that people would want to buy collectibles based on. I guess, is it going to take some time to build these brands up in crypto, or do you think basically we're just going to have NFTs that resemble or are just linked to traditional old age brands?
I actually want to disagree with you slightly, Tom. I think there's a huge opportunity right now for traditional IP owners to do a conversion of their IP into this digital realm. And it's sort of like maybe not the kind of terminal way that like people will be interacting with NFTs, but it's definitely like this prospect of tokenization that unlocks a tremendous value. So if you're someone who owns IP, like imagine you're like a Disney, right? And you have, you know, lines of Disney movies and Disney merchandise. You're realizing that, you know, taking some of this IP and making them into digital objects is actually a better way of interacting with audiences and creates more engagement, especially in this like time of COVID. The fact is that it costs you very little to tokenize them and put them on a blockchain or into the digital domain, and the upside of that is huge, right? And so there's actually, you know, in my estimation, a number of big companies that are looking at folks like Topshot and then sort of looking at their stock of IP and being like, this is a really interesting opportunity in the context of consumer goods. And being a dapper investor, I'm also privy to, you know, kind of the fact that there is a bunch of different companies, you know, that own IP that is, you know, trying to follow in the footsteps of Topshot. So I would say that. But your point is also about like how do we build like crypto native brands, which is also an interesting question.
No, that's a great point, Jake. And just to follow up on that, do you think that these companies will actually be able like be okay and understand all these benefits? Because from us standing here, it makes so much sense for Disney to tokenize characters, because they could easily track them, they can make money off them, they can expand their reach. But I guess I'm just wondering how up to speed these companies are and if they're actually open to doing this. I know you alluded to that they kind of already are.
Yeah, I have some data points like around kind of who's looking, what they're thinking. I could say that, you know, it's still very early. It's like, you know, you have the heads of these, you know, let's call them consumer products divisions, sort of having been plugged into the NFT space. I was on the phone kind of giving a presentation on NFTs to one company, and I can tell you the questions in the audience ranged from, you know, on one side, like, what is a blockchain? But then on the other side, wow, like, I can't believe I didn't know about NFTs before. This is mind-blowing, and this is, like, so compatible with what they're doing. So I think, like, it's very early, but it also doesn't take that much to have a movement, like, into this world, and I think we'll see that pretty soon.
Maybe, I get the sense that big brands have less to gain because they're already so well known, and smaller brands that cut in their fans have more to gain from people, you know, being cut in on the rise of the brand.
Well, I was going to, like, just to build off of that. So I think it was Breitling, that like watch manufacturer, that started like issuing NFTs as a proof of ownership and provenance and authenticity. I don't know if they've shelved that project or not, but you know, it's certainly Breitling is not like a small brand per se, but there's this also element of I guess the cool component of like, you know, do you want to be like, you know, that company that issues like digital authenticity in a way that like you can prove it, showcase it, like I don't know if that's something that you guys have been seeing, but I'm curious how much of it is like, will consumers ask for it and therefore you adapt, or is it just smaller brands wanted to just get ahead of it before and differentiate?
Yeah, I think a lot of this is like, a lot of these brands just want to digitalize the collectibles just to say they're doing it and just for the press and the headlines. I think there's like some Louis Vuitton things that were sort of like in that realm as well. The fact is that Gen Z, you know, don't really care about these IP brands at the end of the day. They're mostly hanging out in, you know, internet culture with TikTokers and YouTubers. And those are kind of the new IP brands to a lot of these Gen Z people, right? And so I don't think I think a lot of IP brands will attempt to do this, but I don't think they'll be successful in the long term just because there'll be so much competition kind of among this younger crowd that kind of purchase NFTs. So what I'm really interested in is sort of this internet culture of, you know, the YouTubers and TikTokers starting to mint NFTs, but then even further, how crypto culture starts to compete with sort of this the traditional internet culture. And I think the crypto culture is more centered around the concept of like DAOs, like Wall Street Bets. Like if Wall Street Bets is sort of like a brand in itself that kind of competes with internet culture brands, I think those will be much more interesting brands that are selling NFTs versus these traditional IP brands in internet culture. So I think everyone's going to be issuing NFTs, but you know, the ones that will be successful are the ones that users can feel like they actually can participate and own and be a part of and shape the future of. And not just, you know, just not just these IP brands that they were just a fan of, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, Brian. And I like to go around the room and just kind of ask everyone what their favorite NFT project is or what project they think is just a complete, you know, either a complete bubble, complete scam, won't work out. And, you know, instead of just, you know, crushing a project, maybe just give a reason why you dislike it. So G-Money, let's start with you. We'll go to Billy and we'll go down. And also, welcome Maya.
All right. So, I mean, right now I love Tonks, for the simple reason that, you know, they're the first NFT project. They actually predate the ERC 721 standard. And, you know, the way I view it like long-term is if there's going to be a crypto art, digital art wing in a museum at some point in the future, I just don't see a world where you cannot have a Tonk in there, you know, and that's kind of like my number one bull case on Tonks.
I'm going to give kind of a roundabout answer to this question, because I think that what we're seeing is we're kind of boxing ourselves into this corner of thinking about NFTs only in the context of creative assets or art, or I don't know. We're just kind of like pigeonholing ourselves. And what I'm personally most interested in are projects that are using NFTs to represent real world assets. And we're not seeing too much of it yet take off. But I think that once we have, you know, NFTs that represent houses and cars and just like physical real world items, what you're going to see is this is maybe a little bit too futuristic, but this will allow us to build kind of standardized interfaces for each of those objects. And then each of those objects are going to be able to more easily interact with each other. And so like, that's what I'm excited about with respect to NFTs. I mean, I love what's going on right now, but I think there's just like, when we talk about NFTs, I think that we kind of think about, you know, a piece of art or a piece of creative content. And I think we need to kind of expand the scope a little bit before we get kind of trapped in this mindset.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of those thoughts. I probably even like reframe the question from what's my favorite like type of NFT to my favorite creator right now. Just Fuck Render, and basically anything that he drops on any platform, I will go and collect. The other project I'm really excited about is Catalog, which is a music specific vertical for NFTs. I think that project trying to get a little bit more focused on what type of NFTs they're issuing and giving different disciplines a place through that is really exciting.
Awesome. I in my capacity as a curator at First Edition, I just helped to curate a new artist called Optimistic, and that drop is happening today. And the work is called Priority Slaps, which is like a really interesting digitization of postal service stickers that he kind of drew over with markers, but he has some like really lively characters and stuff like that. I totally agree though. I think like fonts as NFTs is almost in a way a more interesting use case than art. Like art is a $2 to $3 trillion market today, but I could see the long tail of, you know, digital marketplaces for things like fonts, stock photography, 3D models,
you know, plugins for Photoshop, plugins for, I don't know, audio software, things like that, to actually be a bigger market and a more sort of like fundamentally driven market than art. But today art is a great use case to showcase to mainstream folks.
I don't know if you guys saw the announcement today on Async Art, but it is releasing a programmable music function. And as a musician myself, having gone through the entire process of, you know, sort of creating music, producing it, recording it, etc., I truly believe that this is like going to be completely revolutionary to be able to find and to make music customizable for the first time. I'm so excited about it.
I would have said NF Pepe, but sadly that cannot go on. I think Valerie explained pretty well in a tweet why. More will come out of that, so an NFT universe. So that gets me excited because I'm a World of Warcraft player myself, and I like those like fictional universes with characters. But generally speaking, I think like Super, it's a project that I like a lot. First of all, because it's been for a while in this space. And I'm also a fan of digital art. And yeah, but plus one on the physical world outlets, I think that's going to be very, very interesting in the future, making that physical to digital tie.
I'm going to spend my turn saying I don't believe that NFTs in the real world are going to be that popular. I think there's a huge Oracle problem there that is to be solved and just really hard to get right. Tons of attempts for the people trying to use physical items and redemptions as NFTs as tried by Zoran Foundation in the past. And just trying to deal with fulfillment from a Tsunami's address was just a huge pain. So yeah, I'm not going to shill. Just going to say I don't think that real world NFTs is going to work pretty well.
Hey, I'm going to shill. No, I'm just kidding. one of the projects I think is pretty interesting is NFTX. Because it's one of the few projects that's at the intersection of DeFi and NFTs. And for those who might not be familiar with it, it's basically a platform that allows you to create a kind of index funds for different collections of NFTs. So it could be punks, could be hash masks, and essentially can bring more liquidity to these projects. And also, if you are kind of looking at it more as an investment, as opposed to maybe having a fine eye or having a particular art piece that you're interested in, it could be a way to get exposure to this space. That said, the project certainly has flaws with, you know, the collections of these NFTs, because there's always probably a couple of the you know, NFTs in there that are less valuable or less rare characteristics as the others. And, you know, the founders haven't really worked that out yet. But, you know, I think it's really at the beginning of something there. And it'll be interesting to see how the project can iterate and solve some of those problems.
Yeah. God damn it, James, you stole my answer. But yeah, I was going to say NFTX purely because I think here's how you solve that issue. I think you deposit in the pool and then you can charge a premium if you want to take out a particular NFT, and then the owner can have a ROFR to not give up his NFT, and you sort of have a time lock to make sure that like you don't lose your item. And I think that really opens up the aperture for not just kind of lower quality bottom tier punks or hash masks, but really all kinds of items, because you know the real high end items, like really, I mean, you wouldn't want to risk losing that, right? There's just much, much more emotional attachment to a particular NFT. But yeah, I think NFTX is really, really fascinating because it serves as an interesting proof point to bring liquidity and price discovery. It sort of reminds me of Uniswap in the very early days, where and look, Uniswap, you know, has come such a long way. And really, what you learn from Uniswap is that you can bring really interesting price discovery to a tail end of assets. In that case, it was just obviously fungible tokens. But I think in a similar manner, it's not hard to surmise that like NFTX could pull it off if they tweak a couple of the parameters that you continue to like on the roadmap, where you can have really interesting price discovery on illiquid assets, and that opens up, I mean, the universe of things that you can start then applying it, not just punks, not just hash masks, but really other things as well.
I don't know if you already mentioned, because I joined a little bit later. I like the projects that are like very base layer NFT tooling, like Immutable X, I think is an interesting one. It's not necessarily just for NFT, it's just a scaling solution for Ethereum. But as far as I see, it's focused on NFTs, and it's using DK rollup to experiment for both. the technology, because I think this is one of the fundamental issues. I've been in a few rooms here, as I think a lot of you too, where artists, not crypto native people, but like artists discuss the NFT topic. And most of the time, the issue arises is the minting and all the gas costs, because for like if you're selling, like CryptoPunks or Hashmas for like hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's not a problem to pay like $100 in gas fees, but for the most of the artists which plan to sell a lot of digital art pieces which are not so high value, this is quite a showstopper. So I think all of the tooling, like the basic tooling that makes it more easy for the artist to mint NFTs, easier and cheaper, basically. So I think, yeah, ImmutableX is just one of those.
Many creators are going to be issuing NFTs to use as like gated access to their communities. It's like a really sort of direct yet roundabout way of investing in creators early, being able to see some upside, participating in a community of like their core supporters. I think we're going to see that use case grow quite a bit in the long term. And just to make sure that Brian doesn't feel like a total contrarian, I 100% agree. NFTs as digital goods are interesting. NFTs in the real world, problematic, challenging, and not worth the effort in the short term.
I gotta disagree about that. I think NFTs will have a big role to play with physical objects. As far as they go right now, I love punks, specifically pirate punks. I think that rare Pepes, which are actually from March 2015, are going to have a comeback. I know that one sold for $300,000 recently. And I got to say that rare pizzas is the most exciting thing I've ever been a part of in my life. So everyone should check it out.
Guys, just to go back to the real world assets and NFTs, I mean, I'm not an expert like you guys, but it seems extremely hard to track something in the real world and tokenize as an NFT.
Maersk is using blockchain technology for their shipments. I mean, I have to assume that if it's useful for them, then it might be useful for a lot of their stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like a lot of those PRs are just, you know, bullshit at the end of the day, but I'm probably just overlooking it. But Billy, what's your take?
I mean, definitely in the enterprise context, but I think that once kind of like a cryptographic signature becomes a legally binding contract, like if you, you know, sign over ownership of an NFT to someone else, and then you're legally bound to transfer them a real world object, then I think like things get extremely interesting. And yeah, I think that this is this is far in the future, and like this isn't going to happen anytime soon. But I mean, there's work being done around this, and it's going to happen at some point. And that's like really, I don't know, it really excites me. So I'm interested to hear counterpoints though.
Yeah, so I'd just like to chime in on the real-world NFT problem. That's a very difficult problem that goes beyond the legal aspects of digital signatures, but connecting a digital identity with the real-world asset is a very difficult problem that hasn't been resolved. And beyond the whole like enterprise blockchain fluff, it still isn't anything scalable in terms of creating real markets and from NFTs of commodity to real estate. And just making that logical leap of something in the real world connects in a one-on-one manner to a specific NFT. It's just a non-trivial problem. And there are some startups that are working on it that are fascinating, by the way. Just to jump back into my favorite NFT project, I like Euler Beats a lot, mostly because I think it's the first project I saw that really deals with programmable art. And despite all the hype, and I think most of the NFT, I'm like, it just really does remind me of ICOs in 2017 in a lot of cases. But some of the really cool things are about new economic and business models. So there's a project that I like, Unisti, which is creating NFTs, creating yield farms from NFTs. And by doing that, kind of rethinking how do people pay to have access to NFTs. And another one that I like is Mirror, which is once again looking at NFTs as actual media and what needs to be the stakes for funding both the ownership and the access to every item.
Do you guys buy that a Picasso or something will be tokenized as an NFT? Like, I mean, one, I feel like that community is just so like old money, like they'll never touch like a computer, let alone blockchain. But, you know, what's everyone's take here?
I definitely think that's the case. Especially because, you know, just like linking that like physical to digital, having that like link between the physical and the digital, the physical object and the digital representation of it, an NFT. There's definitely like some companies out there that are doing some great advancements by just like taking a unique characteristic of the material structure and manufacturing characteristics of that object, which could be a painting, and then transposing that within a code that's like unique and can be put into an NFT, and then you can like easily verify that with any phone to see the authenticity of that piece of art. So I definitely see a pathway to that.
Yeah, and I think that just like NFTizing an object unlocks a tremendous amount of use cases for that object. And so I don't think we've discovered what all those use cases are, but as they get uncovered, I think that it's going to be kind of prudent to turn your physical, like create a digital representation of your physical object so that you can like fractionalize ownership of it or bundle it or, you know, do whatever with it. I think there's a ton of things that you can do. Thanks.
I think there's, you know, at the end of the day, anything is literally possible. So like this physical digital argument, I think like I can fractionalize my house if I wanted to, if I really went through the hoops to do it. But like to do this at scale is like really hard, and to have infrastructure in place, like as mentioned before, you kind of need the right decentralized identity to kind of map up with all of this from the real world to digital world. So like if like NFTs should honestly just start as building blocks for like the metaverse and for the digital world. I don't think it's important to kind of focus and even waste block space on kind of just trying to figure out how to get physical assets onto a ledger.
Ryan, I'm kind of with you here. I mean, everything about linking the physical world to NFTs makes me think of enterprise blockchains and linking traditional Wall Street to crypto. Like it sounds amazing, ton of liquidity, but at the end of the day, it's way too hard to link. The Oracle problems are, and it's just not, you know, it's not the new world we're building for, but maybe I'm just too naive about it.
Hey everyone, this is Netra. I just wanted to chime in. I wasn't sure if you were going in a particular order. So quick point, I wanted to rebound off of the Picasso question, and then I wanted to go back to the whole URL versus IRL. I didn't make that up, by the way. I got it from someone, but I liked it so much. So first about the Picasso, I think that, you know, what's really cool is that we move towards a more secure representation, online representation or digital representation of ownership, right? So yes, the connection, the representation of the ownership of that Picasso painting is going to be the first step. But then like the others have said, I think what becomes cooler is what you build on top of that, right? So maybe it's a membership club of Picasso owners, or maybe it ends up being a ticket to some personalized tour of, you know, where Picasso painted and things like that. And I think that's where the other exciting use cases are going to be, breaking into all the adjacent products and services around the actual art. So going beyond an NFT as a crypto asset or as an investment case, but actually as an ID or as a key that will unlock physical experiences in the real world. Yes. Yeah, so that was just my point on that comment. And then regarding the whole URL versus IRL thing, I have to say that this conversation really reminds me of these arguments that I used to have with my dissertation advisor, where I would say, you know, I want my research to have an impact in the real world. And he'd say, you know, this is the real world. And so I think, you know, obviously it's really important to have this debate about going beyond the virtual world. But if we're talking about things like information, recently I learned of a really cool project called sarcophagus.io that basically is an online encrypted dead man switch. So investigative journalists, for example, could wrap. They have this really cool metaphor and symbolism around their protocol. So they wrap, basically they encrypt the information, and then they set a deadline for that information basically to be revealed if anything were to happen to them. And so I think that's it. Information is where we play a little bit in the art space, meaning that, you know, we're both in the virtual world and in the physical world. But that being said, I think that the coolest cases are going to be how to represent physical assets online and also create a space for those now digital assets to be showcased and played with.
Yeah, Natcher, a lot of good content there. Lot to think through there. What's everybody's thoughts and response? Anybody agree, disagree?
I wanted to agree about the showcasing. I think we discussed it the other day with Alex in a different room that one of the issues that I heard from the artists is that they see that the crypto space is, the NFT space is very focused on collecting and collecting and appreciating art, kind of two different things. And yeah, they were saying like, you know, all the projects are like super rareable. They're focused on the rarity and how hard it is to get hold of a certain NFT. But for the artists, another important part is that the art is also appreciated. And I don't think there are a lot of venues for this. Well, Alex is building one of those, Showtime. And also, I think it's going to be super interesting to see like the virtual galleries, the event spaces. One of the events I've been to, like the 3D Ethereum meetup, was pretty cool because there were like 3D spaces and the walls, and there were actual NFTs on the wall that you can come close and look at. So I think this is a very interesting area that's going to see, that's going to get, it has to get developed if you want, if we want to see like the NFT, the art side of NFT thrive, I think.
It's really good points. And I just want to circle back to a point Cooper brought up earlier about following individuals, kind of what Cooper's focused on a lot of his time, obviously Jess at C Club and everyone else here. What's everyone's take on either following individual artists or following brands like CryptoPunks, like Axies, versus following individuals like Blau or Beeple? It seems like obviously it's just much easier to follow a person, but a brand has more staying power. There's a lot of give and take here. What's everyone's thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think they're not mutually exclusive. You know, I think the world we see is individuals become brands, and the most successful individuals have communities that resemble brands. And so the cool part about this, just democratized access to an individual that's become, you know, high network or high value in essence. And so having an opportunity to collect, you know, an artist that's really successful or to buy their social token, you know, the way that all of these remain sustainable over the long term is when a community of contributors is upholding that project. You know, if you're waiting for one specific creator to move a market or to do things that are make a meaningful impact on their project, you know, that's kind of placing a lot of effort into one person. So I think Jess can speak to this well too. All the social tokens that I've seen that have been successful, and I think the same goes for NFTs, it starts with the creator, but then over time as that community forms around them, you know, they can sort of decentralize outwards and give those people responsibilities in that community. And that's what actually makes it have, you know, long-term value and sustainability that you wouldn't be able to get by just relying on solely that creator.
That way as well, we'll see collectives or individuals pool their social capital together to begin curating and creating together. And we'll sort of have this new wave of curator DAOs or collectives. I know Brian's been doing a bunch of work on this lately and trying to explore that topic. So I think it's easiest for a creator to put something out there and have a community form around them, and then for that community to sort of evolve and begin, you know, growing and creating alongside that creator. But I also think we'll see these DAOs, things like Flamingo DAO as a curator. And I have a feeling in 6 months, we're going to be talking about curation DAOs as one of the hottest topics here on Clubhouse.
Yeah, just to expand on that, you know, I think one of the biggest questions creators will have in the future is if they want to sell their work through issuing a portion of their future revenues as in like royalties, or like getting the full amount themselves. And so if you could either go through a DAO and have, you know, have more distribution, but give up, you know, sort of some of your proceeds in the future. It's sort of like the new record label in some cases, like or the new publisher, you're kind of gaining this distribution and more and less risk for yourself, essentially, in favor of more distribution. So I think these curated DAOs, as Jess described, is going to be definitely a hot topic. And I think things like Flamingo DAO are going to lead the way here.
Guys, when do we get to a point where a creator in college is on their iPad, they create some masterpiece, and they just hit submit, and for the next 100 years, they get a percent of all secondary sales or something like that, or if it's used, they earn part of the yield in a museum? When do we get to the point when the real world sees the benefits of NFTs without really knowing what's going on?
I think we're kind of seeing this today. I mean, honestly, like there's this creator called Justin, JSTN, on Twitter. He's 16 years old and he's making like hundreds of thousands of dollars off of his NFTs in a span of like 2 or 3 months. You know, I think Fiocious is another example of this, where these creators started from a digital lens first, and because they found a way to ingrain themselves in the NFT community, you know, I'd argue that they have their careers basically panned out for them. To your question about whether or not that gets recognized by the fine art industry, I think that that's another variable that I can't speak confidently to, but I feel very strongly that, you know, there will be a fine art community within NFTs, and that sector in and of itself will be enough to sustain a lot of these young artists to be able to do, like, you know, monumental projects before they even go to college.
I agree with Cooper there. You know, I've experienced it firsthand already with, you know, some creators, you know, doing some sort of collaboration with them, and then they're, you know, they get a group of collectors, they're already making some money, and it can become a viable business, right? And it's almost like a Patreon, right? Because it's like you're pretty much helping this person create more content that you actually enjoy as a collector. So I think, like, we're there, and, you know, to Cooper's point, is like, it's only a matter of time till it goes mainstream and, you know, you see it on a mass scale.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on there too, because one of the conversations we were having in another Clubhouse room was about how these digital assets are just so second nature for crypto natives. And one interesting development that I saw was that some K-pop artists are actively investing into NFTs as a vehicle for their whole fan base ecosystem. So, you know, again, talking about membership perks, talking about ticketing sales and other collectibles. And I think what's interesting to notice is while we talk about things hitting the mainstream, of course, it's also interesting to think about the communities that it has already fully penetrated, right? And these are the Gen Z and online pop fans that are already actively using all sorts of digital tools, including, you know, for example, using TikTok earlier with the U.S. presidential election to organize politically. So I think it's cool to look at you know, these early adopters and particularly the younger demographics.
Netra, do you think that when you say younger demographics, do you think that NFTs will make its way to, like, you know, when I was younger, I played Pokemon, but it was obviously very siloed. It was only on my own device. I don't actually own anything. Do you think NFTs are going to permeate the much younger communities as well as our own and older? Or do you think that it'll basically be for those financially oriented people, say, you know, 18 and up?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm on the Discord of that young investor, you know, the 13-year-old YouTube channel creator who just talks about trading Bitcoin. But I think we should ask, I mean, is it Alex? Are you the youngest person in the room? For me, I'm just trying to keep up with, you know, my students. And, you know, I didn't even play Pokemon Go. So I played Pokemon cards. But yeah, I think, you know, reading about how people in the playground call each other default as an insult because, you know, they don't have the right skins on Fortnite. These are all trends, you know, I'm trying to keep up with and trying to be in with.
Or potato. That's another one that means the same thing.
I mean, I have to totally agree there. You know, like, I think whenever I've been talking to, you know, teenagers and tweens for the last couple months, and when you just explain the concept of an NFT, like, they get it. Like, it's literally people the age 30 and above that you really need have a hard time explaining it to. But, like, if you explain this to a 12-year-old and, like, the concept of owning it digitally and being able to trade it freely, like, they get it. And they're like, when, like, I want to do this. Like, how soon can we do this?
Yeah, I think I'd be retired. I wouldn't be doing this if I owned, like, one of the few Charizards that was an NFT way back when. But, guys, this has been incredible. I want to respect everyone's time, so we'll cut this off at the hour. We're recording this, so we'll syndicate it to our podcast channel, Delphi Podcast. We'll tag everybody. And I want to thank everyone for coming on. Obviously, a lot of people here, a lot of opinions. So really appreciate everyone's time.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks.
We got three minutes. Let's get some hot take.
Let's do a hot take. We got 3 minutes. Somebody go
on. I'm excited to meet Binance Punk owners that have the same ones that I do. I'm excited about it. What about NFTs on Cardano?
Oh, man. DeFi is easy. Come on, man.
Cardano is mass adoption, guys. You didn't know? Oh, my God.
Can't wait for that conference. Still waiting on my refund.
I'm dying.
Guys, this has been awesome. We'll definitely do another room soon, and thanks everyone for coming.
Right. Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
Of course. Thanks for coming, guys and girls.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.